Hi, Remember Me listeners. As many of you know, Rachel and I are obsessed with music, mostly because of our parents, Leah and Frank. They used to play records from everything from Jimi Hendrix to Prince to Dolly Parton. And for this reason, we are so excited that our latest sponsor is a company called Vinyl Confessions. Vinyl Confessions is an online vinyl record store with a mission to heal the world of its pain one record at a time. Vinyl Confessions albums are all carefully curated by its owner, Jeff, and he has an amazing selection from live albums to classics to brand new albums like Billie Eilish. We want you to go check out vinylconfessions.com and use our code REMEMBERME for 20% off your order. That's vinylconfessions.com, V-N-Y-L confessions.com. Use our code REMEMBERME for 20% off your order. Hi everyone, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Maria, and we're the hosts of Remember Me.
This podcast is dedicated to preserving the memories of those diagnosed with dementia.
We hope this episode helps you feel more connected, provides a deeper understanding, and allows you to learn to accept the good.
Always, always accept the good.
This is Remember Me. Tonight, we have the pleasure of speaking with Dawn. Dawn is the mother of Kara, and Kara is in her early 30s. Yes?
Uh-huh. 32.
32. This is the first interview that we are doing with a parent of FTD, and we just want to thank you for being here and sharing Kara's story. And yeah, it's just an honor. So thank you, Dawn, and welcome.
Well, thank you both for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to share our story. I think it's important to get awareness out. And of course, my story is a little bit different because my daughter is so young. She was diagnosed at 29. February of 2019 at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. It was a long journey to get there. And I was totally dumbfounded when we found what the diagnosis was. It was never on the radar that would be what she was going to have. So I appreciate you bringing awareness, not only to FTD, but also honoring those victims of this terrible disease.
Of course. Dawn, could you explain like one of the first times that you noticed like, something isn't right here with my daughter?
Yes, there was a lot going on in our lives. So I think sometimes circumstances, we have a tendency to blame certain circumstances on the way someone's acting or things that are happening. And so with Kara, it was the summer of 2017. And she was going to have her first child after experiencing a miscarriage in 2015, then going through in vitro. And, you know, there's so many emotions around all that. And then 6 weeks prior to her having her son, my niece, her 16-year-old cousin, who was her mini-me, was killed in a car accident, which was extremely emotional and traumatic. And Kara became very withdrawn, wanting to protect the baby from his emotions and not wanting to be around family, which was a little unusual for Kara because she was very family oriented. So then she had the baby, and 3 days later, Grandpa dies the night before she brings the baby to meet Grandpa. He was my stepdad of 40 some years, one of the only grandfathers that she knew, and her favorite grandpa. So, you know, when she started having a lot of depression, anxiety, certain types of behaviors, we kind of chalked it up to the trauma of these deaths and also being a new mother and postpartum depression. and anxiety. So people kept saying, oh, wow, she's really got bad postpartum depression. But I could just see certain things that I thought, this is not Kara. Kara was very strong. She had dealt with depression, some anxiety before, and she's very strong-willed. And I just didn't see this as being in character for her, the way she would handle it, if that makes sense.
How was she as a new mom? Was it like that worry? You know, we have two kids. Yeah. So, I mean, I have two. Maria has one. Uh-huh. Was it the typical like, oh gosh, is he breathing? You know, that's how I was always panicking. Is that what you saw or was it something different?
Well, she tended to be kind of going through the motions, not a real emotional connection, but yet her worry was that the baby was going to get meningitis and die. Mm-hmm. So she was making sure everyone washed their hands. If you blew your nose and she was three rooms away, she'd, you know, holler in, you need to wash your hands. You know, she was very OCD. Washed her hands till they bled. After a while, she just became very, you know, overprotective. And of course, a lot of moms are that way,
yeah.
Especially with your first one. You've gone through in vitro. You've obviously want this child. You've just lost two of the major people in your life. And so death is there. And all of a sudden, she just seemed preoccupied with that.
I haven't really talked about this on the podcast before, but I had pretty bad postpartum depression and it's terrible. But I'm wondering how you could distinguish that it was more than that, you know, because I think a lot of that stuff can be just postpartum depression. So what was the moment of like, you know what, I think it could be more, or did you seek out help for postpartum?
Well, originally, we went to her, a counselor that she had seen before, and we talked to her regular doctor just for getting your typical antidepressant, you know, type medication for postpartum. And then it was about 4 months in, Kara started telling me that she had this devil voice. Okay. And I'm thinking, whoa, you know, what are you talking about? And later we found out it was like an auditory hallucination type thing. But, you know, at the time I'm thinking, what's happening? Well, what she was saying was, it wasn't her saying it, it was telling her everyone was dying. Like if she would say to me, I think in my head, what's my mom doing? And this voice would repeatedly say just constantly, she's dead, she's dead, she's dead, and never stop. And she was being tormented by this voice that tended to say things, and it would cuss, it would say bad words, which was not Kara's nature. And it was very upsetting for her. And so I thought, wow, we need to see a psychiatrist, you know, we're maybe going into like a psychosis type thing, which is very real too in postpartum.
Yes, yes. People don't know that, but that is, I think it's a less common, you know, known part of postpartum, but yeah, yes. Postpartum psychosis, or you hear these like really negative, it's a real, I treat it
real thing.
Yeah. It's
yes.
Really scary.
It's so, yes. It must have been so terrifying for her.
Oh, it was. And that I think is the one thing that was so overwhelming for me, because I had just suffered the loss of my niece and then my stepdad. And then I was helping my mother deal with losing her youngest granddaughter, her husband, also my sister, who was the mother of my 16-year-old niece. She had died a couple of years before at 34 of breast cancer. And she was like my firstborn and we were extremely close. So I'm just trying to come through all this. And then Kara's having these issues and I just was on survival mode. I was trying so hard because I knew Kara was missing out on the one thing she ever wanted in life, was to have a baby boy. And she was a nurse. She was married. This was like the next piece for her, you know, I'm going to have a little baby boy. So I was just trying my hardest to figure it out. And we went to the psychiatrist, and of course they try medications, which take a while because you can't change medications quickly. And she started becoming extremely OCD. She would watch the same movie, The Greatest Showman. She watched that. I mean, she could just sit and watch that movie just constantly. She was taking care of the baby, but it was more of, you know, when you first have a baby, everything's very on a schedule.
Like regimented.
And that was good for her, and very regimented. And she liked that. There wasn't seem like a whole lot of emotion in it, but, you know, the baby eats at this certain time, blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't until he started need to eat real food, she started struggling because he wouldn't keep his head still. Well, a baby doesn't keep their head still, you know. She knew what she had to do, but she was struggling with the fact that she couldn't get it done because there were other factors. And here she was a nurse. She had a niece and nephews. This was not something that was foreign to her. Caring for people had been something she had done for a long time. So at this point, I'm just very desperate. You know, she's being misunderstood by other people because they're not understanding why she's acting the way she is. Why isn't anything helping? So I actually talked to organization called Postpartum International. And I talked to a postpartum psychosis coordinator. And this was actually right before her son turned one, because we had been going through this roller coaster of trying this medicine, it not working, just things getting worse. Kara becoming more and more irrational. She had irrational fears. She dealt with things like, well, we'd be going down the road. This is kind of interesting. And she'd see like a dead squirrel on the side of the road. And she'd be like, oh, someone hit a squirrel. And she was almost more emotional about the squirrel than she was relationships with people.
We've heard this. Yeah.
Have you heard this before?
Yes.
And I'm like, that is so strange. And then she would see a squirrel in the yard, or she would see something and it was like she'd seen it for the first time and be, you know,
childlike.
Yes, that very childlike innocence. Mm-hmm. And there were things like that that I started noticing. I'm thinking, this doesn't seem like postpartum to me. There's just something not right. And we decided, this coordinator felt like that Kara needed to go to a perinatal psychiatric unit, which there's only two in the nation. And I thought, this is our answer. I was just overwhelmed. I thought, great, we'll go down there for 2 weeks, straighten out her medication. We'll come home. This nightmare will be over. We were there 2.5 months in North Carolina, and I lived down there while she was in this locked unit, and they couldn't figure her out. There was one doctor who felt it was neurological, but it wasn't on their radar. She was only 28, 29 years old, and they weren't thinking dementia.
Right.
And it was an overwhelming experience. It was a great experience. They treated her exceptionally well, but we came home with no answer and defeated. And she continued to decline. She didn't care about hygiene. She had no filter. She had no insight or judgment. And that was very difficult. She couldn't be left alone because she wasn't making, you know, rational decisions.
Was the auditory hallucination still going on at this point, or had they subsided?
Well, that's interesting because I think they were still there, but we don't know when they actually ended, because for Kara, she became very automatic in her responses. And I told the doctors, I said, I could sit here and tell you word for word what she's going to say to you, because that's what she always says. And so they noticed it too. When they come in, she would, you know, talk about the devil voices. She would say it in almost like reading a script. And so we're really not sure when they really went away, because if she was asked about them, she would talk about them. But she finally got to the point where she didn't mention it on her own.
Yeah. Rachel and I are nodding because both of our parents, even though my mom had the language variant and Rachel's father had behavioral variant, they also had these scripts, mm-hmm. like maybe a handful of these five phrases to communicate. Mm-hmm. And yes. you can get by for a little while if people don't know what's going on or have no knowledge of the other behaviors. You can get by. Mm-hmm. People are like, oh, you're a little odd. Okay.
Yeah. Now, at this point, do you think or could Kara verbalize like something is wrong? Something is not right with me? Or was she very unaware of this decline?
Initially, she knew something was wrong because she would tell me things like, if it wasn't for you, Mom, I wouldn't be here. I couldn't do this. She was married and it was hard for her husband to understand things that were happening the way she was acting because it was so out of character. And she would say, if someone could just be in my head for 10 minutes, and know what I'm living through, they would understand. But she couldn't put her finger on the problem. She just knew that it wasn't right and that she didn't want to be the way she was. But she couldn't necessarily tell you, you know, what the problem was. Like there were times that she would say before we made her stop driving that the devil voice would tell her, just drive off the road and kill yourself. Well, then she would say, but I know that's not me because I don't want to kill myself. But she had to deal with, you know, just that horror of the script in her head that wasn't her. And that's why she called it a devil voice. It wasn't like it was like a monster or something. It was just something that was not her and it was negative and it made her feel like it came from a bad place because her relationship with God was very strong.
Absolutely terrifying. Like, I mean, we're all moms here. If my kid were to turn to me and say, I hear a voice, like you do anything in your power to get that voice out of your child's head. And little did you know what was coming for you, right? So after the stay at the perinatal psychosis center, what happened?
So we come home and, you know, they said you need to monitor her mainly for safety. That at that point, she could still, you know, put something in the microwave, feed herself, you know, do certain things. Of course, she didn't care about hygiene, which happens a lot. There were things that she could do. She slept a lot. I'm not so sure if that was some of the medication or just a way of getting away from what she was dealing with. And she just continued to decline. And her doctor, which was the psychiatrist locally, he was just overwhelmed and kind of at a loss. And he said, you know, if they didn't figure her out in North Carolina, I'm not going to figure her out because they're amazing professionals. And he said, I think we need to go to Mayo Clinic in Rochester. Now, he actually was sending her for a psychiatric evaluation because of the severe OCD. And she, I will step back, while she was in the perinatal unit, she actually even had electric convulsive therapy. This girl went through, I get emotional thinking about all that she went through. And she went through spinal tap. She went through, I think, 6 treatments of electric convulsive therapy before they just like, this isn't going to, you know, do any good. So he was thinking, you know, they may have to do some kind of like deep brain stimulation or there's other things for this severe OCD, which is overwhelming in itself. So as a mother, I'm just like, I think sometimes we hurt more for our children because we kind of put our feelings aside but then it's a double whammy, so to speak. Absolutely. But anyway, I said, you know, we'll go to Mayo. We're going to do whatever we need to do to get answers because this is not your normal depression, anxiety type thing. So they had to send her information and be accepted at Mayo, which she was. Then it took us about 2 months to get in. Once we were there, the doctor, the psychiatrist, the minute she saw her and started to converse with us and talk about her story, she immediately wanted a full neurological workup by their teams. And she said, I would not want to do anything before making sure that we're not missing a major illness of some sort. And I was like, please, you know, we just want answers. Little did we know the answer we were going to get was not something we would want. But I don't know about you, but when you live every day, and I get kind of emotional about this, but every day I would get up before she was diagnosed and think, today's the day we're going to something's good's going to come. I'm going to see she's better. We're going to get her better. We're going to try. And every night go to bed defeated because nothing was working. And when you do that day after day, and this is going on a year and a half, that when we finally got to Mayo and we were given a diagnosis of FTD, behavioral variant, the doctor was almost emotional himself, being that she was 29 years old and a young mother. And he said, I hate to tell you this. And I actually said to him, we're already living the nightmare. You just put a name to it. Right. Because we already knew what we were dealing with was beyond, you know, what anyone else seemed to know.
I had gotten to a point with my mom where when we were searching for answers, where I knew whatever this is, it's not going to get any better. So there was some relief just knowing what it was and knowing that her behavior was not her. You know what I mean? Like just having an answer gave me peace for like a day.
Yes.
And then it settles in. But for a day, it was like, okay. So one major theme in the podcast is what happens in that diagnosis room. So when you finally get that FTD diagnosis, do they give you any sort of a roadmap or any instruction on care or any game plan?
Actually, as we were going through the tests and were then brought to Dr. Beauvais, basically we were told, you know, it's incurable, it's progressive. So we weren't really given much of a plan of care. It was more of you'll need to get things in order as far as at this point, she's not going to be able to make decisions on her own. You know, you're going to need to get the like legal guardianship, those type of things in order. We were also told, not by Dr. Beauvais, but by another doctor, that typically the younger you are, the more aggressive and quick the progression seems to be, which was very difficult for us to hear. I do agree with you, though, Maria, when you talked about there's almost a sense of relief that there's a reason why these things were happening, you know, because when you can't figure it out, and then she's being misrepresented by some people, you know, who thinks she doesn't want to be a mom or she's, you know, neglecting or the things that I knew were not Kara in her nature. It's almost as if this makes sense now.
It's the truth. I mean, it's like you, the whole family gets the diagnosis, right?
Exactly. My husband and I were together with Kara and like we both just looked at each other because what do? You know, you've got her sitting there looking at you and you're trying to stay strong for her. And we get back to the hotel and we had gotten two hotel rooms that joined because I would sleep in the room with her because you never knew what hours of the night she was up, you know, so he could sleep. And then also she went to bed early after medication. And then we could kind of sit in the other room and kind of digest what we had just been told. Because of course you immediately get your Google out and try to find information. And sometimes that can be scary and overwhelming.
Yes.
But yet we wanted to know what we were facing. And when I read the list for behavioral variant, I'm like, oh my gosh, that is my daughter.
It's, you know, amazing. They have it like crazy. To a T. You're like, wait, check, 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 check.
I remember the same thing.
Yep. It's insane.
It's like, it's this weird thing of like, aha, but like, oh my God, because then you get to the bottom, at least the bottom of the page that I read. I still remember the website. It was like kind of old school, like blue background. And at the very bottom, it said 7 to 10 years. Life expectancy. Mm-hmm. And that was the punch in the gut.
Yeah. But it's so weird that you feel almost, I remember I was reading it and I'm like, I felt almost happy, like alive again, like, okay, this makes sense. Now I know he's not just choosing to be this way or
right. It's
completely out of his control. And then like Dawn, you said, like you sit down and you digest it and you're like, my loved one has this progressively terminal, awful disease.
That's exactly it. It's like the array of emotions that you have that very day of diagnosis day goes from one extreme to the other, as well as does the journey. It's so much of a roller coaster. You have to choose, I've found, to look for the simple blessings every day and find joy. And you can find that joy and live in those moments. And then something will happen that just brings reality back to the forefront. And then, you know, there you go again. And they call it perpetual grief. I think I've heard, you know, you grieve. Kara is not the Kara she was, but she's still Kara. And then you learn to adjust to those type of things. And then another decline comes. And then you grieve again. Every stage. Kara was diagnosed February of 2019. My mom unexpectedly died in July of 2019, 5 months later. So now I've lost my sister, my niece, both of my parents, and my daughter is living with an incurable progressive disease. At that point, I'm thinking, you know, I'm broken. I've got to do the best I can. And Kara couldn't even process that her grandmother passed away, which was really difficult for me because they were extremely close. But Kara was kind of, I come home and I said, did you hear about Grandma Pate? And Kara said, yeah, she died. Do you have any brownie bites? You know, like it was nothing.
Apathy. Yep.
That apathy. And I knew that she would probably react that way, but I think sometimes even though you know something doesn't make it any easier, you know, at that moment, because I was extremely vulnerable to those feelings. So she didn't attend the funeral, or I didn't put her through any of that, because Kara totally shows no emotion. She's not shown pain. She's not ever complained of pain for over 2 years. And that was very, sometimes they know more than what they can articulate or even express. And I wanted to protect her from not being able to help her through something.
Were you going to ask something, Maria?
I'm kind of just digesting all of it. And I just want to hug Dawn.
Yeah.
So I can't think of any questions.
I have one.
Okay.
So the diagnosis is what, a year and a half old-ish?
Over 2 years.
What? Oh, yeah. It's 2021. 2020 yes. was kind of
yeah. lost, 2020, so. Like, didn't happen.
Oh, my gosh. So where would you say she is now? Is she still verbal?
No. Unfortunately, Kara has declined a lot, in especially the last year. She is totally nonverbal. She is incontinent, both bowel and bladder. She has to have even help dressing. If you help her initiate things, she can, you know, kind of follow through. She can feed herself. She's very mobile. She paces. She loves to swing. That's her big thing. So she's in and out, goes out and swings. And she's, like I say, very mobile. But like starting to have some swallowing issues, more of the pocketing of the food, the water. She now can't sip out of a straw. And so we were having her use just drink out of a cup. Well, then we noticed her choking. So we were told to try the sippy cup. And that has helped, because what was happening, and with a lot of FTD patients, they have a tendency to put too much food in their mouth or too much, you know, water or anything, because they're not able to regulate that. So the sippy cup has really helped with the choking. So I'm thankful for that.
So are you her 24-hour caregiver, you and your husband?
Yes. My husband is a little bit older than I am, and he early retired in the summer of 2019. And he worked, you know, stayed home. His job was really time consuming, different hours, and pretty stressful. And so we had him stay home, and I actually work for a home care agency. I'm a physical therapist assistant, and I work PRN, and that has been a major change for us. This has been a financial burden, but we choose and plan to keep Kara at home with us, you know, till the end. So yes, we take care of her. We are a team. I have a wonderful husband who is awesome with Kara. That's his baby girl. And we tag team, trying to give each other a break. And then we have another daughter who is 3 years older than Kara. They are and have always been best friends, even since childhood. And she will come over and stay with her sister sometimes when we need her to.
And what is the relationship between Kara and her son like? What does he think is going on?
Well, the one thing is that when she was first a mother and he was first born, she did a lot of nurturing as far as the feeding and the singing Jesus loves me every night. And she did a lot of that. So there was bonding early on, but by the time he was really able to converse and, you know, and be more active, Kara was already struggling. So he's not really known her any other way than the way she is. And they interact, but you have to figure Kara now has become kind of very childlike, very toddler-like. So we'll have them engage. She doesn't initiate really anything with anybody, but we'll have them, you know, throw a ball, play things together. And he calls her mommy. He has always done that. And actually, the little bit older he gets, the more affectionate he is towards her. He will, you know, walk up and hug her. And the other day he was walking through the hallway and he looked up at Grandpa, my husband, and said, "I love my mommy." Just so sweet. And just, of course, my husband looks at me with these tears in his eyes like, you know, we need to hear that because number one, I also think a lot of adults could take lessons from children as far as being understanding and accepting of others, maybe not being the norm that they think they should be. And his childlike innocence and love for her is, I think, a godsend for us because it's very emotional to watch your child go through this, especially knowing everything she's lost out on. One of which is raising her child the way she would have wanted to.
Dawn, what has this been like for you? Like, and have you even had a chance to stop and reflect on that?
It has been at times overwhelming. At one point, I remember I'm a strong Christian, and I remember praying and saying, "Okay, God, I am now totally broken. I've lost a lot of my family. I've been through a lot, but my daughter, you know, her losing all that she'd ever wanted in life at such a young age." And you're right. My story isn't any more devastating than someone else's because this disease steals your loved one long before they are gone. It steals them from who they were, who you knew. It's hard to look at someone sometimes every day and not see anything resembling who they were 5 years ago. And yet you love them. You're going to be there for them. You find those new ways to make connections. But as a mom, I have two daughters. They're my world, just as my grandkids are. Kara and I, when she was younger, I think because we were actually a lot alike, both of us a little more assertive and independent, we clashed quite a bit. But as she became an adult, with both my girls, they're my best friends. And the one thing, and I'm going to get emotional, that I miss with Kara is the fact that I used to say, "Do you like this outfit?" And my oldest daughter would say, "Oh, yeah, that's okay. That's nice." You know, kind of patronize me. Kara would say, "Well, I wouldn't be caught dead with you in that outfit. You know, I wouldn't be caught with you wearing that outfit." Mm-hmm. And I would be like, "Well, tell me how you really feel."
Right. Yeah. You know? The banter.
Yet, the thing was about her was Kara was that type of person. She loved you enough that she wasn't going to give, you know, tell you a falsehood. Kara was a type that she, if she loved you, she felt as if she was always very honest because Kara wanted people to be honest with her. Mm-hmm. She was so, she's kind of an old soul. She was very mature for her age. And, you know, we used to joke, well, if you want to know what Kara's, you know, thinking, just ask her. But there was something very special about that, because if I really wanted to know how something was, I could ask Kara, and I knew that she would have my back, or, and she would be there for me, and she would tell me, you know, because she cared enough. It wasn't that my other daughter didn't care about me, but sometimes she would, you know, she didn't want to hurt my feelings. Kara's like, I'm going to hurt your feelings so you don't walk out there and look like an idiot type person. So anyway, and I think, to be honest with you, and this has just happened in the last couple of weeks, and your parents probably did this, when Kara became nonverbal, she would repeat a lot. Did they repeat like what you would say?
The exact same thing. How are you doing? How am I doing?
The yes. parroting. Yeah.
The parroting. Yes. And she would parrot a lot. And so every day we would say, I love you, multiple times a day. And so she would, I love you, because it was always singy songy, you know, because they love that rhythm. And up just a few weeks ago, that went away. And she can't tell me she loves me. And I know she does. And a couple weeks ago, when I noticed all that leaving, I dreaded that day that she wouldn't be able to say it back. And another thing was, I had said it because I'm going to continue to say it. And she kind of was, I, and she kept trying to get it out. Then my heart broke that she's wanting to tell me and she can't, and how that had to be for her. So I just, you know, hugged her and said, I know you love me, you know, and just made a kind of a joke out of it. And she's always putting her cheek up to me for me to kiss her on the cheek. And she's very loving. She can't really kiss because she doesn't have that ability to close her mouth and pucker, but just like a child, like a baby, little open mouth kiss on the cheek. Mm-hmm. And it's just those precious times are what get us through. So I still say it to her. She doesn't say it back, but I'll usually say, you know, I know you love your mommy, and give her a kiss just so she knows I know, because I can't imagine how it would feel to want to tell someone something and not be able to verbalize that. It would be very difficult.
Well, what I could tell you is you are, how do I even like put it in words?
I think world's greatest mother.
Yeah, seriously. I mean,
oh, you girls are too kind.
You are very inspiring, Dawn, and your husband as well. And I just want to reach through and give you a big hug. You've done a beautiful job throughout the story sharing with us some tidbits about Kara and the lovely person that she was before FTD. But tell us what else you want our listeners to know about Kara.
Yes, that's been something I've wanted to be able to share. And I think that's a really special part of your podcast. I got to thinking about, I think you had mentioned, what do you think Kara would want people to know about her? And I looked at it that way because she is still Kara. She's still my daughter, and she's just as loving as can be. And I know that Kara would want, number one, people to know she was loyal. She's a very loyal friend, very hardworking, caring. She was a nurse. She actually worked on an Alzheimer's unit, her first job, and she was amazing with the elderly. She had actually quite a connection with them, and it's just, you know, kind of ironic that this has happened to her.
Wow.
Yeah. And another thing, her faith means a lot to her, and she has actually held on to that, because there are times that she's even written on my furniture, she's made like a cross, or she's wrote Lord God Jesus. And I believe that's a comfort to her. And that's something that is a comfort to me. Kara was very generous and she was funny. She had a dry sense of humor. You know, it was sometimes you didn't know Kara was going to be funny and she'd say something and it was just the way she said it. And very sentimental, especially with her family. And all the losses that we had suffered immensely affected Kara. And I have always struggled once she got this disease that as much pain as she had really gone through in such a young age, and then to go through this, but she's probably one of the strongest people I've ever met because she's handled this with a lot of grace.
I mean, where do you think she gets that?
I don't know if anybody could be stronger than you. Yeah, newsflash.
I'm like, I don't know where she got that from.
Like, other like
well, we're both pretty independent and pretty assertive, I would say, but it's definitely, I get
just
my strength.
Take the compliment, Dawn.
Okay.
Don't be such a mom. Don't be such a mom. Just let us love you.
I appreciate that love. I really do. And I feel your hugs.
Thank you.
Because I can tell that you're both very compassionate and honest in what you're saying because of what you're doing for people like me that has a family member who is suffering through a very cruel illness.
So cruel.
And not only for the patient, but for the family. Mm-hmm. My oldest daughter, Kirsten, it's been extremely rough on her because they were best friends, the only two siblings. And, you know, they wanted to raise their kids together. They, you know, like one time she put, you know, they used to go get pedicures and to the movies. And now she's babysitting her sister who can't even speak to her. And that's not where you expect to be in your mid-30s. And she jokingly says, Kirsten does, oh, Kara was the nurse and she was supposed to help take care of you and dad when you get older. Now I'm going to be stuck with that job.
Now it's my job.
And you know, I don't like that kind of stuff. And you know, it would be very overwhelming to not only be losing your sister, but your best friend.
I think it's hard for the siblings too, because yeah, it's just, I don't know. I think with my aunt, sometimes she kind of just feels like it's not as bad for me. And it's like, no, that's your sibling, you know?
Yes, yes. Because I lost my baby sister and that was very hard. And I think there are families that do have closer connections. There are siblings that maybe aren't as connected as others, just like there are in a lot of different dynamics in different families. But that was definitely a tough one because I do believe that's a lot of people have trouble with that. When you have a family member going through something, they're afraid to share some of their experiences because they don't feel like it's, oh, well, it's not what you're going through. But
right. Along those lines, I was kind of thinking, I wanted to know if you could maybe give our listeners a few things that you think are helpful to you when, you know, friends or, you know, maybe people at church ask you, what can I do? How can I help you? What is most helpful to you in terms of getting support? Is it, you know, a casserole? Is it a listening ear? Can you share with us?
Yeah, that's a good one. You know, I'm a strong believer in prayer and being sustained by that. And I appreciate those thoughts and prayers. I believe it is the listening ear or just not being forgotten. One thing that I think is bothersome when you have, like, especially with Kara being only 32 and being young and all, and feeling like no one's around, you know, if someone has cancer or something like that, it just seems like people are more apt to come around because I think they maybe understand or know more what to say or to do. Not that that's an easy situation either, because my sister died of cancer and that was very overwhelming too. But I think that just knowing people care, it doesn't have to be anything major. There's a lady here in our community who every holiday sends Kara flowers. She didn't really know Kara that much, but she had lost her daughter when her daughter was in her late 20s. And she sends Kara these flowers every holiday and just remembers Kara. And that means so much to me that someone cares enough about my daughter to send those to her and do something for her, because she is still here. And so I think, it, you know, it can even be dropping a card. I think a lot of people don't do that much anymore, but I've given Kara a card that someone, I said, oh, so-and-so sent you this card. Like she got one at Christmas that was, you know, like a picture card. And I laid it down in the kitchen on the island. And before I knew it, I thought, wonder where that went. She had taken it to her room. She knew that was for her. She couldn't say anything about it, but it meant enough that she had taken it in and put it in her own bedroom. So I think that those little things, people fail to realize how much they can mean to others. Does that make a lot of sense?
It makes sense. And I want to touch on, like, because Maria and I say it all the time, like if it was cancer or if it was something else, we could still have them. Like they would be more with it here.
Yes.
But the personality shift and the behaviors, I personally think people get nervous. Like what if they
get awkward,
freak out, or what, you know, they don't know what to expect. Whereas cancer, maybe they're just laying there more peacefully. But with this FTD, they get up and they pace and they, you know, put things in their mouth and they get, the other person gets to feeling like, oh gosh, what do I do? Am I supposed to look, you know, because nobody talks about this kind of stuff.
I agree. And number one, I felt that, I felt awkward like that before as well, you know, around people that can't communicate with you because you don't know what they're thinking. Or I've been around some that have been in accidents, you know, that aren't able to. And I guess because of my age, experience has helped me to kind of learn and look at situations like, which side of the coin would I prefer to be on? Would I prefer to be awkward and maybe reach out and feel awkward and be me? Or would I rather be Kara? You know, I try to look at things like that. Which side of the coin would I want to be on? And if I, you know, most generally, someone's going to say, well, I don't want to be Kara. I don't want to have this type of situation. So can I put my, make myself a little uncomfortable, you know? And I think too, when you go through situations, you learn that, and then you can help express that to others.
Right.
That's just something that I do, because sometimes, I mean, none of us want to be uncomfortable.
Right.
Or I would advise people to just be honest with friends and family. You know, if I'm going to go visit someone who has a disease or a, something that's happened traumatic in their life, you know, just be honest and say, you know, I really don't know how to handle this. And my opinion would be, well, we'll get through it together. Believe me, we don't always know how to handle this either.
Right, right.
Kara has taught me a lot. And one of the things she's taught me to do is, we're not human doings, we're human beings. And she's helped me to learn to be versus worry about what I'm doing. And I've had to stop and pay more attention to those things that I truly have missed out on, because our society and just our lives in general are a little bit overwhelming at times. And one of the things I wanted to tell you about real quick was, one winter it had snowed, and there, we live up a wooded lane, and there were deer tracks. And there's this little squirrel hopping in the deer tracks. And Kara's like, oh, look at that, that squirrel. And I stopped to look, and it was so cute. This little squirrel, you know, jumping up out of these deer tracks. And we sat and watched this together. And it was such a moment of, if it hadn't been for Kara, where the way Kara is, I would have missed out on that beautiful scene. It was just, it was beautiful. And I had to stop and just pay attention and look at the joy in her face. That was, like I say, probably 2019. And I thought, I've thought of that many times, that she teaches me so much because I try to look at things that way, because I think so often we have a choice. And I would encourage people to, you know, stop. Now, that doesn't mean I don't have days that I'm overwhelmed. It's challenging in the middle of the night when she's, you know, up and I'm thinking, seriously, Lord, we need some sleep. But I just wanted to share that little thing before I read my stuff. But I think that's one beautiful thing she told me.
I just want to share that million-dollar piece of advice to all your listeners.
That's beautiful.
She really just has taught me so much.
Yes. Enjoying those simple, sweet moments.
Yes.
Yes. I love it.
So now we would love to hear the letter that you brought with you from Kara.
Okay. Do you mind if I share two little things?
Oh, please. No. Okay. Yes. Share them all.
Okay. Well, when Kara was in fourth grade, I don't know when you were younger, well, they would do your silhouette, you mm-hmm. know, in black and white and, you know, send home to your parents. Mm-hmm. Well, in fourth grade, Kara had her little silhouette, and then they had Kara and then Kirby. And in between, she wrote things about herself. So this would be Kara at like 9 years old. She wrote, Kara. Happy, caring, loving, sweet, daughter of Tim and Dawn, lover of music, family, and friends, who feels sad when people get hurt, who fears hard homework, big storms, and guns, who would like to see Florida in sync in concert and heaven. Oh. Yeah. So this is what Kara thought of herself at 9 years old. And she was right. She feels bad when people get hurt because she's very caring. She feared hard homework because Kara did not like homework. And she wanted to see Florida, which she did. She never saw NSYNC in concert, but someday she'll see heaven. So that means a lot to me.
Oh, that's so sweet.
And then the one thing that initially when you mentioned about the letter or something that Kara had written. This is a thank you card that Kara wrote to me actually after she had had Carson and she was ill with going through this, but we did not know what it was. Okay. This would have been prior to diagnosis. So, and this just kind of shows how Kara was about showing gratitude. Mom, thank you so much for all you do for me and baby Carson. You are amazing, and I'd be lost without you. I can't thank you enough for all you do for us. I wish I had more money to give you since you've had to miss so much work just to help me. I love you so much. You are the best mom ever, and I am so blessed to have you as my mom. Love, Kara.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. We release new episodes each week now on Tuesdays, so be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts. If you want to connect with us, you can follow us on Instagram at Remember Me Podcast, or you can go to our website, remembermeftd.com. And if you want more Remember Me, check out our brand new members-only site, Remembers Only. You can sign up at remembermeftd.com/joinRO. This podcast is produced by Maria Kent Beers and Rachel Martinez, and the beautiful music you hear is a song called So Damn Lucky by Bailey Kent.